You know, he's driving home, pulls into a driveway, walks up the stairs to his apartment complex, puts the key into the lock and twists it, turns back, looks over his shoulder, boom, credits.
I love how on Discord it just shows Jonathan unmuting himself, saying something, and then immediately after the mute button comes, like the little symbol pops up.
He's like, I've accomplished my mission. All right. Welcome to episode 2 of the Thought Patrol podcast. We now have a lot more co-hosts this time. I am joined by my friends Anthony.
Hello.
We got Sean.
Anthony, I love you.
That's Sean. And then we got Jonathan on the line as well. And
hello.
Yeah, there he is. So we're all good. We had some technical difficulties, but we have started. And we're going to go ahead and, again, start the second episode of the Thought Patrol podcast. We do have an official name, thanks to our glorious co-host, Sean. And, it's a working title. We'll figure out what's going on. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about our top Nintendo games, what we've enjoyed in our past and games that we've played, and we'll also be discussing just how much Nintendo has done as a company for video games over the years. So... if you guys like the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button, slap that like button as well if you see that, and join our Discord in our chat so you can connect with us. And we also have our PlayStation names as well. So we're going to go ahead and get started. How was your guys' weeks?
Next question.
Wait, do you not want to talk about it?
Oh, no, there's just not much to talk about, man. It's been lots of ill-omened news on the financial/work front. I'm going to be, needless to say, I'm going to be hitting the old resume, like, double hard.
Damn, bro, Sean, you come to my, yo, just get that leg out there, fam. Get on one of them corners. Show some skin.
Shave it down a little bit, right? Show off the calf muscles.
Yeah, you'll get some work. I see you getting some work. My week's been pretty good. I recently played the Prey demo. We'll talk about that a bit later. I enjoy that, and I have some problems with it as well, obviously. But besides work and school, it's just been the grind as always. Finals have been going on, so we're doing that. And yeah, it's just kind of overall sucked. But, you know, we're working to live with it.
My week was pretty good. I mean, just work, school. Not too much going on.
Yeah.
Other than the Star Wars Celebration convention that I went to the other week.
We tried to have you come last week for that. How'd that go? Did you do anything special?
Yeah, I went camping. That was pretty fun, but I tried to tell you about it, but I had no signal, so I couldn't actually say anything until I got back over here.
Okay, well... I'm sorry, I don't care about the camping. I'm talking about the Star Wars event. So I want to hear, did you like meet anyone special? I heard that like did they have like actual actors there? I heard that like John Boyega was going around and doing videos on Twitter and like high-fiving people and stuff.
I think that was on the first or second day, because the days we went were Saturday and Sunday. So we didn't get to see like the Carrie Fisher tribute, which was on the first day. And there's like just a couple other things we did see. There's this panel called "These Are the Droids You're Looking For," and it was I forget the actor's name. It was the one who did
Get it going. Just name a character. I don't know.
C-3PO.
Yeah, C-3PO. No. R2-D2.
Yes, 3PO.
Oh, 3PO.
Yes, 3PO. He also.
Who was it? One more time, Sean.
Anthony Daniels, I believe.
Anthony Daniels. Thank you. There's another one. Awesome. I'm really bad with names, so. But the guy who did K2SO in Rogue One.
Oh, the black robot?
Yeah. He was,
cool. Gotta be he was black, a nice character.
Because he's black, Sean. Bruh. Don't
always comes down to... Always comes down to the color of a robot's skin with you, man.
Bruh, it's only the second episode and I've been labeled as a racist already.
Damn.
Does it take very long, I guess? All right, sounds cool. So did you, besides, like, did you meet, like, I know Mark Hamill did something. Did you meet Mark Hamill? Well, at least see Mark Hamill?
Yeah, we went to his panel. It was Mark Hamill as himself was the name of the panel, and that one was great. He specifically, like, he made it a point to say that his panel was not, like, his panel was, like, more of a conversation between him and the audience, and the audience just basically asked him like a bunch of questions and he responded. But when we got to see him, his voice was like really raspy because he had like a signing booth, and at the signing booth you could pay extra for him to do like a voicemail because he does like a lot of voice acting and he could do like a lot of voices. So
that's cool.
By the time we got to see him, his voice was just like shot. So yeah,
he had to do a lot of Joker.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what he had to do.
He always loses his voice when he does that.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. All right. What about you, Jonathan? How's your week been going?
It's been pretty good. Just dealing with finals.
Been sexy.
Yeah. You know.
Hard, usual. Sexy.
Just trying to get.
You know, Mark Hamill does that a lot, though. That type of panel thing where he talks to people. I've seen videos of him doing that before. It was really nice. Cool.
But I think it wasn't like as personal as probably the other ones. Because like the auditorium was like huge. There's like two levels and everything.
Oh, cool.
I think I saw a video from the one you went to, or at least part of it.
You probably saw it because that one was pretty big. I was surprised at how big it was.
It seemed pretty massive. He said that specifically did shout outs to the nosebleeds. Apparently there was a second tier or something like that of you know, sitting place or whatnot.
Yeah, in the auditorium there was
a second Jonathan, row. Save me.
What?
That's cool as hell, man. I'm Julie. I don't like talk, Jonathan, save me. I'm sitting here fucking up with words like Anthony now.
Oh.
I'm not
I like, you know, the thing that people sit on. You know what I'm talking about, eh? Hey, put the heads on it.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so I'm glad to hear you're all doing somewhat well. That's good. And, you know, I say one thing about doing this, and the more we do it and the more we'll get to talk to each other more often and get to hear from each other more often. That's one good thing about it. So let's go ahead and move from that onto the news, the happenings that we've been going over or that have been going over the past week since the last episode. I'm going to start I listened back to the first podcast, and when I swallowed, I could hear it. And it triggered me so badly. So I'm going to try my best.
It was kind of hot.
I didn't hear anything, so.
I'm going to try to not do that and not say as much, too. But again, I've never done this before. We're working on it. So our first article we got from GameSpot by Chris Pereira. I'm going to go with that. And it says, we have Nintendo talks about an NES Classic Edition discontinuation as sales surpass 2 million. With the system now discontinued, Nintendo has revealed that it has shipped 2.3 million NES Classic Editions around the world since its launch last November. Nintendo of America president Reggie My Body Is Ready Aim shared the figure with Time. This is a sell-in figure, which accounts for the number of units shipped to retailers, as opposed to sell-through numbers that only track units actually purchased by customers. That said, given the incredible popularity of the system, there's likely little distinction between the two in the case. So they're talking about it now. From what I've heard from people, now this might only be a Florida issue because we do base in Florida, but from what I've heard from people, they have not been able to find these things anywhere. And no. as a worldwide figure, I don't know how 2.3 billion. I don't know how that doesn't or billion 2.3 million. Yeah. That doesn't. I don't know. That doesn't sound like a lot for me. And we've had Nintendo do this shit before, where they come out with something new, and they never meet their demand. Meet their demand. So we always end up having troubles with that. And someone goes to look. I remember when I was working at Target at the time, and I worked in the electronics section, and I was there. And the day it came out, we got one unit, and we had not received another unit for like a month until we received another one. Then we received two units. And like, there's people lining out the door. There's like 12 people there. And I was walking out, going home because I worked the night shift. And they asked me, they're like, you got any NES classics in there? I'm like, one, good luck. And then I got in my car and went home because it was going to be a bloodbath in there. So it's just crazy. I don't know why they do it. I don't know if they think it's like it looks cool, like, oh, we're sold out everywhere. That must be everyone loves us. They're trying to keep up some kind of like community view on them. I have no idea, but it I'm sure it pissed off a lot of people when they couldn't get as many as they wanted. Cause that's like I said, going back, that's 2.3 million worldwide. That's not even just to the United States. So that there's some problem.
Called
there.
An artificial demand for something when there's plenty of stuff that it's what the De Beers does with diamonds. The reason why you pay so much for diamonds, why they're so fucking expensive, the whole clarity, everything, they invented all of that. And they have a huge stockpile, trillions of dollars. I don't know if that's an exact number, but a fucking ridiculously astronomically huge diamond stockpile they sit on, and they just let tiny bits trickle out per year, and it keeps the value up. Nintendo looks at their mistakes and they learn from those mistakes. They don't necessarily learn quickly enough, but they learn from those mistakes. So with the Amiibos, with the little NES thing, with everything they do, it's all ridiculously calculated, and they create these artificial demands, and it's like free advertising. You can bitch about it, you can praise them, but people are constantly clamoring for Nintendo merchandise, and if they can't get one thing, they're going to buy something else.
Yeah, I feel you.
They do it with everything now. They do it with their consoles. They did it with the Switch. They do it with the Amiibos. They've done it with the Wii U. They did it with the thing we're just talking about. It's fucking see, look at that. I just fucked up on a word again. But no, it's fucking – that's the thing. The only thing about Nintendo that pisses me off, besides them still trying to be the Disney of fucking video games, is that artificial bullshit, because you can't get your hands on something and they do it intentionally.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a marketing tool.
Yeah, well,
it exactly is. It's just a cheap ass bitch marketing tool.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more later as we get into our main topic. Let's go on into the next article, and this is interesting. I found this on GameSpot. This is by Eddie Mackick of GameSpot, and it says Overwatch passes 30 million players on their shooter. Now, this is across all platforms of it.
Collectively?
But collectively. So Blizzard shooter Overwatch has reached a new player milestone. The developer announced today that the game has now passed 30 million registered players, which is up from the 25 million figure that was announced back in January. Importantly, Overwatch has not necessarily sold 30 million copies, however, that many registered players is a big achievement regardless. In November, Blizzard announced that Overwatch had reached 20 million registered players, hitting that figure faster than any game in Blizzard's history, which is crazy. Now, we've all dabbled in Overwatch a bit, played together, screamed together, yelled at each other together. But the important thing is that it was together.
Yeah.
And it's a good game. I'm happy for Blizzard because they always take a genre that's existed and they work to perfect it and release their own version of it. And I think that's what they've done with Overwatch. That's why it's so popular. It's got a huge fan base. Being the type of person that I am, I can't sit and play it all day because I'd sooner break the disc in half and like blend it with like a banana smoothie and consume it than play it all day. But it's a good game. I could at least acknowledge that as a whole. What do you guys think?
I like it just because it's like a pick up and go. Like anyone can play it. Like you don't have to like sit there not and like, put so much time into it.
Oh yeah. Well, not.
Well, as like in terms of skill.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see where both of you are coming.
Yeah.
I can see where both of you are coming at with it because it is very pick up and play, and you don't have to be competitive all the time. They have modes that you could be more chillax about it, but it definitely also has that like super high skill ceiling. So there is a lot of room to improve as you play. So it's definitely a good game. The music's excellent. The world, the lore they're building around it's really cool. As they release these new events that have like these like technically these campaign missions, like they did with the Uprising event.
That was good.
Yeah, really cool.
I like that event.
I hope
Overwatch is one of those games where it's easy to pick up, but you know, there's it's challenging to master, but it's not. I don't consider it like a technical shooter like some of the other online or more complex shooters are.
Yeah, it's more like an arena. It's more like an arena.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, your awareness has to be there. It's like when I first started what you guys were talking about. You have to be aware of where your team is. You have to be aware of what their weaknesses and strengths are. And if you're trying to be competitive, you have to be able to fill in a specific job role and stay on your toes and be aware of shit. And
Yeah, definitely. That's like the healer's main job.
Or I kind of fell into the support role before I started getting into tanks and shit.
Yeah. What'd you say, Jonathan?
I said me stuck as Mercy whenever we play in competitive.
Yeah, pretty much.
I love you guys. Yeah. This is the voice of Jonathan.
Sean. What do you think coming from our number one rager in our group, Jonathan? What do you think about this recent statistic?
I mean, coming from, you guys played it way before I got it, and you guys convinced me to buy it. Say that it's a good game. Enjoy playing it.
Did we all just die?
Yeah.
Oh.
it's interesting to see that many people enjoy the game that much, because there's a lot of shooters out right now, like Call of Battlefield, and then all
you
the
new it's in the red the whole down instead of being going through the other more positive shades, but I can hear you, Mo.
Man.
Except for now.
we'll work on it. Both of you being, well, Jonathan has issues with the Citadel Wi-Fi. We'll work with it. We'll see how it goes.
We'll count our blessings.
This program is not sponsored by the Citadel. That shout out was free.
Yeah, that was a free shout out. But
just be thankful I'm not on my Discord.
Anyone want to send me an email? ThoughtPatrolCast@gmail.com. You know, we'll talk business. We got like what, 18 views on the last video? We're practically there already. PewDiePie, watch out. We're on our
way. Watch out!
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. So let's move on to the next. We have Nintendo confirms that they have no major E3 event this year, and they reveal the 1-2 Switch shipment numbers. I don't know who the hell cares about the 1-2 Switch. Do you guys care?
I don't even know what it is.
I could.
That's the first time I've heard of it.
It's another like Wii Sports.
Yeah, it's like their shitty attempt at Wii Sports. It's not even as good as Wii Sports was.
Tech demo.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It's good. Everybody plays it, has fun with it. I just don't think
that fun doesn't last. It's like a good.
Are they pricing it at like a full game?
It's a full fledged game. I think it's $60.
It's not a full fledged game though.
Well, no, it's not. When it came out, it was $60. It probably isn't anymore because everyone realized that it's not worth $60. All right. Okay. Let's read this real quick. As part of Nintendo's latest earnings report, the company confirmed that it will not host a large scale press conference at E3 this year. This is no big surprise, as Nintendo also didn't do one last year. Nintendo will still be at E3, however, Nintendo of America will present further information on our plans at a later date, Nintendo President Tatsumi Kimishima said. If it's anything like last year, fans can expect a Nintendo Treehouse livestream event or some kind of other presentation featuring commentary and insight from developers and executives. Also, in Kimishima's prepared remarks, he revealed that 1-2 Switch is approaching 1 million copies shipped, while Snipper Clips, Cut It Out Together, has already passed more than 350,000 downloads. But now, see, with this, with the 1 million...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I have a feeling. Didn't 1-2 Switch come like pre-packaged with some Switches? Or was it like a separate purchase?
Pundits had suggested it before the system was released.
Yeah. From what I've seen released, of it,
but I have some yet.
From what I've seen from it, like a gameplay perspective, it's okay at the least. I don't think it's worth $60. I think Snipper Clips, which I've been playing with my sister, if we're ever like out and doing something, like I just pop out the Switch and play Snipper Clips. That game's fun. And that's only $20. And I think that's a much better than 1-2 Switch. Well, that's odd.
Snipper Clips has gotten good reviews.
Yeah, Snipper Clips is a cool game. So that's interesting. Again, Nintendo not really stepping it up at E3, and it's odd because they like try all these things to try and stay relevant, but they don't do things that a relevant company should be trying, like having big E3 events. I know they don't have a lot coming out, but they have that new Mario around the corner. That's all, I guess. What else does the Switch have?
That's pretty much it.
I mean, they have arms, but I don't know how many people give a shit about arms. So I don't know. They could do.
I can't tell you how much I don't.
Right now, there's not a lot for it. Being a proud owner myself, it's pretty much a Breath of the Wild machine right now. Mario Kart just came out. Mario Kart's cool. But like the thing, and going back to like the lack of supply, you run into that problem where if you want to play with like 7 or 8 people, you'd be lucky to find one other person that owns a Switch. It's not like the DS where everyone had a DS. Not many people own Switches right now.
Do you think they did that on purpose?
No. Well, I think the Switch limitation, probably. They know that there was hype for the Switch. I can't imagine.
Yeah, but if there's so much hype, why limit yourself? If everyone, let's say if 2 million people wanted it and they only make 1 million, they're losing out.
Yeah.
Unless they're trying to create more of a demand for it.
Well, because they can always release
more. That's exactly it. If something's difficult to get reaction to it, so people that normally wouldn't buy it or normally wouldn't rush to buy it are now pushing to buy it. So when they do, so you keep you keep dropping bacon crumbs and getting people hungry for bacon, and you just lead them to the buffet. You watch, like 6 months down the road, after people have been hungry for this thing for so long, you'll get these huge shipments, and then it's going to be fucking everywhere, just like the Wii U was, just like the Wii was, just like fucking you can find amiibos everywhere. They just do the limited releases first. Later they'll bring the same fucking thing back after people have already gone on eBay and spent $200 on Toon Link, and then fucking get, all of a sudden there's 400,000 Toon Links.
Yeah, I felt you. Like, that reminds me of this one story I heard from this one gentleman that, like, doesn't like Rosalina as a character, right? So what he did was he went out and bought, like, hundreds of Rosalina amiibos and just stored them in his house so no one else could have them.
No way, really?
Straight up. I saw it.
He's a fucking psychopath.
I saw it on Reddit. Like, how... That's such an odd like psyche to have about
this,
something.
This is why we don't give people like him money. Do you know what I would do with money? I would
just about to say that.
This guy makes me angry. He's like those assholes that wear the jeans with the pre-stained mud on them, kind of bullshit. Like, look at me. I actually work for him. No, you don't, fucko. Go home.
Oh my god.
Oh, goodness, fucking assholes. And Sean, think money, of the children. Chafes my ass. Yeah,
Sean, think of the children.
I am thinking of the children.
Oh, man.
He's like, this is for the good of the children.
For a middle-aged man.
This is for the good of all mankind. Every one of those people. We should drop them on a fucking island or in a pool with a bunch of sharks and then just sit back and laugh.
Jeez. Okay. Moving on to the next article.
That reminds me of a game.
We've only been through 4 and it's been like 30 minutes. I'm gauging. I've added more. I'm gauging how much time we spend.
That's pretty good, though. I think.
Well,
I've got a lot to say on Nintendo.
I know. That's why. Let's try and get through these articles a bit quicker.
Well, why don't we save the Nintendo ones for the end?
The Nintendo thing is at the end. It's the main topic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Disregard what I said.
Shit you not, dude. It was almost like you guys backed away from the mic to have a little conversation, like business related, but the mic followed you. Like, you guys just broke, like, the way you were talking, your vocal patterns, everything stopped, and you're like, just save it to the end. Well, I am saving for the end, dude. That's a fun topic. All right, dude, I got you. All right, cool. And then you come back to the mic, only the mic was like, fuck you guys, I'm listening.
All right. Back on topic. Next article. This is interesting, I think, and this is about, I know Sean doesn't care already, but this is about the new Call of Duty, about the World
War II. Don't care.
Okay. Sean, we've already lost him, but I'm going to go ahead and present this article. Call of Duty World War II, ditching health regen, and has some form of dedicated classes. They have a quote here from Sledgehammer saying, you have to worry about every bullet. This is by Oscar Deus. And it says Call of Duty World War II has revealed in a lot more depth yesterday, with developer Sledgehammer Games unveiling the game's release date, special editions, private beta, and full story trailer. Now more details have emerged regarding the game's single player. According to Polygon, the campaign is ditching health regeneration. Oh, this is just campaign. See, this is why we do research ahead. Okay, the campaign is ditching health regen, a system which has been present in the series since the 2005 Call of Duty 2. You have to worry about every bullet, Sledgehammer Games co-founder Glenn Schofield told the site. You're not the superhero. You can't just stand there taking 7 bullets, ducking, and shooting again. It's refreshing for us to deal with recruits who aren't tier 1 warriors to show that vulnerability. They're naive. It's been a really cool challenge creating this different kind of gameplay.
So does that mean that the game's just going to be locked at like a veteran mode almost?
I guess so. I
have something to add to that.
He's like, no longer are you Superman, asshole. You were the one that created the fucking idea in the first place.
Well, Sledgehammer, Sledgehammer,
Sledgehammer, I'm talking about the Call of Duties and all their clones.
That's what I'm saying. This is the Sledgehammer developer.
My point, shooters used to be difficult. You didn't used to auto heal from anything. You had to find health packs or just deal with the entire level on one bar of health. That's the way they used to be. Games like Call of Duty sissified people. So he's acting like it's a fresh, brand new concept. It's not a concept. He's going to something that's an idea that's like 2 decades old.
I think we could just label Sean as the angry member of our group. He's the angry man of our group. Okay.
He provides insight. Twisting facts. It's stupid. Like, I like the idea. It already sounds like a better game. But the health regen thing, it was an arcade thing. Games got easier in the early 2000s. They got much, much easier. Auto saves, health regens. People didn't
back in my day, we had to walk up the mountain with the snowshoes on our feet. And we had to go all the way up the mountain, all the way up to school, right?
Hey, I'm still talking. And Demon Souls and that Bloodborne and shit like that, that's brought it back. They brought the challenge back. Games aren't easy anymore. We're getting longer games again. Gamers got lazy for a while, man. And Call of Duty was one of the reasons why.
Yeah. What'd you have to say, Jonathan? What's your intake? Your intake? What's your take on this?
I read an article the other day about the multiplayer for the new Call of Duty game, and it was talking about how it's going to it's going to have 3 aspects to it. Like, there's going to be airborne, infantry, and armor. So there's going to be vehicles in the game, supposedly, in the multiplayer. That's as far as I know about the game. But in terms of them going back to the way that it used to be, where you were in auto.
He is talking, right? I just can't hear him.
Yeah, he's talking.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Yeah, we can hear you.
No, we've heard you. I also hear your friend in the background. But we can hear you.
Sorry, they're rude.
I can't hear him. Do I have him muted?
Love you.
Maybe.
It sucks that you're
private. I don't know. I can hear him. All right. Yeah, yeah.
But as far as the health regen thing is concerned,
he's not muted. I'm just not getting his vocals. That sucks. Original, I can't hear you, baby.
I know. It's a sad thing.
Okay.
But the original Call of Duty, one of my friends has the original Call of Duty on his computer. And there was no health pack. There was no health regeneration. You had to pick up a health. Like, that's the way that the old Call of Duty was, and I don't know what made them move it away from it, but I don't know what the multiplayer was like back then either, so I don't really want to attest to what things were like.
Well, from what I remember from 3, they had a class-based kind of system.
Well, 3 was the first one to have a class system, and then I think in 2, they had the health pack stuff where you had to pick up health packs and whatnot to heal. I don't remember. It's been a long time since I played Call of Duty 2 online, but I want to say the health regen thing was a new thing that came out with Call of Duty 4 when that came out with the old gen consoles.
It's so weird that I can't hear him.
Yeah, that is interesting. So, again, we'll see. The hype kind of has grown a bit. We'll see. Have they... I think they've done a stream about their gameplay. I'm not entirely sure. I know they have the release trailer for the story, which looks interesting. They're sticking on the European campaign, so they're sticking with, they would probably be dealing with Nazis and not like World at War where it was Japanese. So I'm excited.
It's focusing. They're World going back
War?
To
big World at War was everybody.
Yeah, but in
you had the new Russian campaign, on. You had a German campaign. I don't remember the Japanese part.
I wonder why you can't hear him. It's really weird.
But like I was saying,
I don't have it muted.
Go ahead, John.
They're focusing on Big Red One, the unit that they focused on in the second one that came out before too. They focused on Big Red One, which is a unit, and they're focusing the story back on that unit. The campaign, at least.
Sounds good. All right, let's go and head over to the next article from Chris Pereira again at GameSpot. It is the Overwatch Heroes of the Storm exclusive skins will eventually come to loot boxes. Now, at this point, we only have two of those skins. That is the police officer D.Va and the
Oni Genji?
The Oni Genji skin, yeah, that weeb skin. And right now, as of currently, the only way to get them is by playing games with your friends in Heroes of the Storm, and they might be bringing them eventually to loot boxes. Let's read this article. Cool Overwatch skins that can only be attained by playing Heroes of the Storm are a strong way to get players to try out the MOBA, but it's also a tactic that has angered some fans, particularly those who don't have computers with which to play the PC-only Heroes of the Storm. Blizzard is aware of that frustration and has revealed those skins won't stay exclusive to the MOBA forever. We completely understand that there are some players who do not own or have access to a PC to play Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch director Jeff Kaplan wrote on the game's forums. Because of this, we plan to add both the Oni Genji and Officer D.Va skin to the normal base Overwatch loot box at some point in the future. Kaplan didn't get any more specific than that, but at least Overwatch players eager to get their hands on these skins now know that they will have a chance to do so eventually. With that said, I encourage anyone with access to a PC to play the Nexus Challenge. He added, Heroes of the Storm is an amazing game, and you'll unlock those skins for free and before anyone else. Of course, it's an amazing game coming from Jeff Kaplan. So that's interesting. I didn't really care about the Genji skin because I don't give a shit about Genji. Well, I suck at Genji. That's my biggest problem.
I'm happy about it because I missed it for, what was it, Halloween?
What?
The Oni Genji.
No, Oni Genji was for playing Heroes of the Storm. Did you not listen to what I just said?
Wait.
You only can obtain it by Demon playing Genji. Heroes of the Storm. That's the only way
Demon
to get it.
Demon Genji was Halloween, dude.
Wait,
Oni
which
Genji's
one?
Were ask. Wait. Demon Genji was Halloween.
Demon Genji is what he's saying.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not.
Oni is Demon.
Not. No, it's not the same skin, though. Oni skin was locked to Heroes of the Storm. Yeah, it's locked to Heroes of the Storm.
So wait, what difference is it then?
I think the Demon Genji is just a recolor.
Yeah, it is. Oni's he's got different tattoos and shit too.
That's Hanzo. You're talking about Hanzo.
Sorry. Wait,
no, I don't even think there was a Genji skin for Halloween.
Yeah, I was talking about Hanzo. Yeah, there was no Halloween skin for Genji.
There wasn't. Was. Stop. No, there wasn't. Don't slap the table like the mic picks that up.
Yeah,
might be.
We have that though, so that's good to know moving forward that we will be able to get those. Okay, next article coming up, we have the free PlayStation Plus games for May 2017, and this is for the Vita, PS3, and PS4. Sony has announced a lineup of second. This is Chris Pereira again on GameSpot. Sony has announced the lineup of free games PlayStation Plus members will receive next month. On PS4 in North America, Plus subscribers will be able to grab the sea exploration game Abzu. Now, I'm excited about that because Abzu's
it's
same
gorgeous.
People that did Journey, gorgeous game, awesome soundtrack, looks really cool. As well as Telltale's episodic Tales from the Borderlands. Those in Europe will receive Alien Nation in place of Abzu. Wow, that sucks. Both of the month's Vita games, Laser Disco Defenders and Type Rider, support cross-buy with PS4, providing owners of the home console with four freebies in the total next month. Those on PS3 just get the usual allotment of two Blood Knights and Port Royale 3 Pirates of Merchants. All these games will be available for download beginning next Tuesday, May 2nd. You have until then to grab all April's free games. So I'm really The other two, I haven't really heard of, but Abzu is really cool. I really contemplated getting that when it first came out because I enjoyed Journey so much. So I'm really excited for that. I'd be definitely picking that up when that starts. And I recommend that to you, Sean. I think you'd like that
more again. More of the physics. Oh, I know. I like it. I love the Journey. It's supposed to have more physics-based stuff in it, though.
Yeah, it does. It's really pretty. The environmental design, everything about it, beautiful. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to the next. We have the Persona 5 vinyl. This is interesting. Persona 5's delightful soundtrack heads to vinyl with a special mystery artwork. This is, again, Chris Pereira, our boy. After releasing on iTunes just recently, Persona 5's soundtrack is now getting the vinyl treatment. Atlas announced today that it has partnered with IM8Bit to release two different versions of the soundtrack on vinyl. The first, dubbed the Essential version, is a 4XLP, I'm assuming a 4-disc, that features a curated selection of Persona 5's most popular music, as chosen by Atlas Sound Team. The other, the Deluxe Edition, is a 6-disc with a complete soundtrack consisting of all 110 songs. Both of these will be quality box sets, but you'll notice the images above do not feature any proper artwork. That'll remain a mystery until some unspecified point in the future, but is described as the result of an intimate collaboration between IM8Bit, Atlas, Sega, and a to-be-announced top-secret artist.
What the fuck does Sega have to do with any of that?
Well, they own the property. Or...
do they?
They do.
Did they own Atlas?
Do they?
I have no idea.
I have not heard such things.
We'll find out, I guess. If you're willing to plunk your money down without seeing that art, pre-orders are live now through IM8Bit's website. The Essential Edition costs $100, while the Deluxe Edition goes for $175. If you're interested in the latter, you may have a limited time to place your order. Only 1,000 are being made. Both are scheduled to ship in the fourth quarter of 2017, just in time for the holidays.
I see
that. These are records?
Yeah, they're vinyls. Yeah. They're vinyls.
I see that being one of those things that where people buy like 10 of them and then reselling them for like $800.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that happening.
That's what happened with the fucking the Nintendo we were talking about earlier. Yeah. That whole like, we're going to release it so that everyone can get some. And then they didn't. And then when they fucking only release two or three per store, one asshole goes in, buys all of them, and then resells them to rates that only rich assholes can afford.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be worth it for those who actually get it legitimately and like want to like get it for themselves. Because just with the music in itself, I think it's worth it. And then on top of that, the artwork that's going to be added on top of it is it's going to be worth it, at least for me.
It's definitely a collector's item.
I would frame it.
Like the
that's true.
Yeah, I don't see any reason of playing it. And if I wanted the soundtrack that much, I mean, they give you like a limited version of the soundtrack with the deluxe edition that you buy for the game,
like a digital.
You get like copy. It's a CD, but you get like only like 13 songs on it. But you can get the actual, the 4-disc, you can actually get the 4-disc entire soundtrack on Amazon. It's like $70 though.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I like Persona soundtrack, but it's not something I'd listen to outside of Persona, I don't think. Because I think it does a good job in amplifying Persona as a whole, but I don't think it's
something you listen to
on your own? Listen to on a daily. I don't know. I don't see it. Like, it's weird because
Persona's always used like a lot of bubblegum, disco, jazz. They've always used a lot of like, I don't know, weird art house pop stuff in their games. Whereas the main Shin Megami Tensei series has always used like industrial rock and symphonic stuff. They like each one has its own style, and Persona's always been a very pop art kind of thing.
Yeah.
So definitely. The music in this album, as much as I fucking detest disco, the music in this album fits the game when you're playing the game. But if you make me fucking listen to that shit when I'm not playing the game, I'm going to punch you in the nose.
Yeah, you're definitely are angry.
It's so good.
You're
angry. It's so good in the game, though. I'm just saying, I'm agreeing with you. It's really good in the game. It's so good. But then when the game isn't angry playing, it's disco. It's fucking disco.
Yeah, definitely. That was rude, though. No angry grandpa. All right, let's move a bit forward as well. No, Sean, chill out. Chill out, Sean. Chill out. All right, so we have, this is on the actual amount Wonder Woman has spent on marketing so far. We're going to move a bit into some movie news, some interesting articles I just stumbled across while I was researching. We'll talk a little bit about that before we move into our main topic. And so the first article we have for that is the, like I said, the actual amount that Wonder Woman has spent just on marketing so far. This is by Adam Holmes of Cinema Blend. And it says, after making her live action theatrical debut last year in Batman v Superman, we're not going to talk about that. Wonder Woman is almost a month away from finally leading her own movie after more than a 75 years of existence. While Warner Brothers has put out three trailers for Diana of Themyscira's adventure.
Anthony, take that away from him and you read it.
Since last summer, there have been concerns over the last couple days over the perceived minimized marketing for the Amazon. I thought it meant like the company.
Wonder Woman is an Amazon.
I know that.
Keep reading it.
I straight up thought that Amazon was like leading that. Whatever. Okay.
No.
She's an Amazonian. They could have said Amazonian without confusing me. Like, look, it's even in bold. Whatever.
For the Amazons.
Okay. Leading up to the release, like new posters, regular TV spots, merchandising, etc. Opinions will vary on how big of an issue this is, but it turns out that at this point, Wonder Woman has already spent over $3 million in ads.
Holy fucktards.
Yeah. So there, again, we go back to DC hasn't had the best luck. Well, I'd say the best
track record.
Anything?
Yeah, with movies recently.
DC's been hot garbage since they started this whole mess.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still, I think we have some, well, I don't know if it'll be hope, but some cynicism moving forward, I guess, as they release Wonder Woman and the Justice League movie. So we'll see.
You know, hopefully.
I'll be honest, dude. This is the first of any of DC's movies since Nolan dropped the reins and DC decided to make their fuckiverse. This is the first movie that looks good.
Yeah, Wonder Woman does look good.
I legit am interested. The only thing that bothers me is I know they're going to tie it in with the other movies somehow, and that's going to drag it into the seventh pit of hell. Because every movie I've seen so far, even if I like parts of it, was hot garbage.
Yeah, it's probably going to have its own DC style on tying in with Justice League. They're going to try and build hype for that as they do.
It's Batfleck. Oh, Batfleck, the distinguished chin.
So... yeah, that's a lot of money to spend on marketing, but we can see that they probably have some type of faith in this movie, so that's why they're pushing it so hard. So I'm excited to go see it when it comes out.
Chris Pine into it, and Chris Pine's been pretty careful with his movie roles recently. So
yeah,
they got his ass in it. I'm curious.
Yeah, we'll definitely see how that goes. And that, wow, you have 36 tabs on your phone. Okay, so moving on to the next article. This is another interesting article I had found on Cinema Blend. This is by Dirk Libby. What a name. I love you, Dirk. Dirk Libby. After Pixar receives a hilariously vicious letter from an 8-year-old after seeing the Cars 3 trailer. Now, we've all seen it. It was definitely shocking the way it felt dark.
Oh my God.
Way they did it with McQueen crashing and he's flipping around. And he seems like he's close to death or whatever.
Or dying.
Yeah, or dying.
Kind of like, what was it? What was his name? Doc Hudson? Was that the car's name?
Which one?
The one that
gets messed up initially?
That was Doc Hudson. Oh, okay.
Paul Newman.
Yeah. So... back to the article. Fans of the Cars franchise were shocked when the first teaser showed us our hero, Lightning McQueen, in a major wreck. And that's how the movie starts. Needless to say, some fans could not believe it. However, according to producer Kevin Rayer, who spoke at the recent Cars 3 Media Day, there was one Cars fan who was especially shaken by the event. So much so that he hatched a plot for vengeance, according to Rayer. We have a quoting Rare. We have a favorite story where an 8-year-old wrote us and said, "Are you really killing Lightning McQueen? Because if you are, I want to buy the toy that kills him so that I can kill him." Now, this is this is a straight up letter sent to Pixar by an 8-year-old fan. That's kind of dark. What's wrong with him? Like, something's got to be going on at home. Well, for you to be that distraught from a like fictitious car with a goofy ass face dying.
Well,
all I know is there's a kid somewhere in America that wants to murder, straight up cold blooded murder, something that does not exist.
Or yeah,
that's some black human hatred. That kid's gonna be skinning squirrels when he's 13. Damn.
I didn't know that the Cars fandom was so like tight, like that. Yeah, and you can't step out of that fandom. The moment you do something out of line, they jump on you, death threats and.
Bro, dude, every fandom is like that. It goes to
show that like a lot of these like movies and like just TV shows can impact a lot of kids like harshly. Like it.
Kids, dude, they impact adults that way. Yeah.
But
God, how many times have you heard me rant against something like what they did to fucking Batman and Joker and Teen Harley
Titans,
or so on?
Teen Titans.
So
is that like a trick
God,
question?
The new Teen Titans is like, oh God, it's like the inside of a dirty man's ass.
Oh my God.
So much wrong with it. So bad.
Yeah, you got a point there.
Little Pony took a shit and mixed it in with Care Bear puke, and out came the Teen Titans cartoon. Like, what the fuck?
We're talking about the new one, right?
Teen Titans Go, yeah.
The new one.
Oh, Go? Okay.
And the thing was, is the original Teen Titans was so far from the comics, it was its own universe. Like, they took Deathstroke, turned him into a totally different dude.
Yeah, they did.
They changed so much, but it was still so good. Good.
It was really good. Oh, I liked it a lot. Yeah. I loved it.
Yo, guys,
real talk
though.
Cars.
Best girl? Do we have a best girl vote?
Raven.
Raven?
Raven.
What?
Hell yeah, dude. Raven all day.
It's 3-1.
It's all about the girl that can throw rocks. No, the girl that.
Oh,
the
Tess,
rock.
No,
Tess?
Tessa?
No, what's her name?
Tara.
Yo, I get
the
it.
The blonde.
I get it.
Oh, you get it finally?
Tara.
No,
it's definitely Raven, but are you talking about Tara, the one that died?
Yeah, she's.
Bruh,
she's close second with Starfire.
Starfire? I don't like Starfire. Bro, dude.
I like you, just because she was like this like alien who had like an accent and just like was just like that.
Accent? You mean she was like a retard?
Sucker, man.
You mean she talked like a retard?
I thought it was an alien accent, okay?
Sean, don't oh god me, you throwing the F bombs all over the place. I can say the word retard.
What have we become?
F bombs and retard, dude. I'm besides, that's not what I'm oh godding, but
okay.
Go ahead, call yourself out.
Dude, Tara, best girl though.
Raven, 3-1.
Raven.
I had nothing wrong with Raven.
I'm a goth boy at heart. What do you want from me?
Okay. Well,
she can Metreon Zarathos all she wants to, as long as she's naked.
Well, all she's wearing is like a bodysuit.
Can we? Weren't they all? Let's keep in mind that they're all underage, right, Sean? So nothing.
Raven, what? Really?
They're teens.
I can be
the
as
Teen
old as
Titans.
I want.
Shut up.
The Teen Titans.
Shut up,
dude. When it was playing, it would have been like a whole like Romeo and Juliet fucking thing going
Pretty
on.
Much.
We would have been fine.
Sean's sitting on the couch with that like little kid half chub, right?
Half show, what are you talking about? I got a t-shirt on.
Is it 3/4 then?
I'm layered up blue right now. Slide right off the couch.
Is it 3/4 or 80%?
You know we can't hit full chub. The moment we hit full chub, there might be.
The police are going to come knock
on
the door.
No, that'll knock the phone out of my hand.
Yeah, knock the phone out of my hands. All right, let's keep moving forward. The next thing I have is, again, from Adam Holmes at Cinema Blend. .com. We have
got to get you some new websites. There's Den of Geek. I can show you a whole bunch of stuff.
This is Cinema Blend,
bro. Then how about you research the articles next time, Sean, instead of me doing it by myself. Okay,
I'll pick some up.
Maybe we'll put, if we get some commitment from the team, then we'll continue. All right, let's get
all
back
right.
To
well, yeah, fair enough.
Okay, so
continue.
Disney has been taking two. Let me actually read the freaking title. The live action Winnie the Pooh movie may have found its adult Christopher Robin. Disney has been taking two approaches with the live action remakes of its classic animated movies. The first is faithfully retelling the story and only changing a few things here and there, like how Beauty and the Beast was handled. The second is going for a dramatically different interpretations, like what Maleficent was for Sleeping Beauty for the upcoming live-action Winnie the Pooh movie. Disney is going the latter route by having the 100-acre wood denizens reunite with Christopher Robin as an adult. Now, there's word that Ewan McGregor might be the one playing the grown-up Christopher.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay, that's interesting.
Okay. I'm sensitive with my Winnie the Pooh shit. They fucked that up, and Disney's going down.
Oh, are they?
That's all I'm saying.
Might get some terrorist bombings or something at Disney headquarters.
I'm going to get a couple of hard-hitting pipe niggas with a couple of blowtorch.
What did I say about the N-word?
Okay, you
get actually, that was actually a fairly bad misquote of Pulp Fiction. But, nah, man. Dude, Winnie the Pooh, come on. We all grew up with that. That shit's biblical for us.
Yeah, it is. I absolutely.
What do you think about the path that they're taking about Christopher Robin being like an older man and then reuniting with all of the people of the 100-acre wood?
Well, I want to know, they're aiming
why they were separated. Audience. They want to bring us back in for nostalgia because none of us are going to go back in the theaters to watch a Heffalump movie. All those Winnie the Pooh movies in the early 2000s they came out with, that was all for our kids or sisters, brothers. That really wasn't something any of us would have gone out of our way to see. Well, most of us. I mean, I know you're thinking Anthony.
Yeah.
But with the live action thing, if you do something where they're going to meet back with Christopher Robin, what Disney's doing is they're reaching out to not only kids to go and watch it and get the whole Pooh experience, but you're also going to be pulling in adults who are being reached out to from their childhood by their memories of Winnie the Pooh. So their whole angle on that, I guarantee you, is you had a couple of psychologists and a whole bunch of suits sitting around a table going, what can we do to draw audiences in? And they said, what if it's like a reunion thing? Everybody's going to go back in to see it. You're going to have adults going without kids to watch something like that. I'll fucking go watch that.
Yeah,
I was tempted to watch Beauty and the Beast, but mostly just because of Emma Hotness.
That was a good movie. If you have not seen that movie, go see it. It's really good.
I love the original, but I'm a diehard Lumiere fan, like Lumiere for life, for real.
Lumiere was amazing in it. Like he was like one of my favorite characters.
Jerry Orbach passed away because I would love to have heard him reprise his role as Lumiere. He was fucking perfect.
He was.
I don't know about, I don't know, man. A live action, like, I don't know. That's so fucking weird, though.
I want to know how they're going to animate, like, the animals.
Or if they'll do something like.
Do it like they did Jungle Book with, like, just.
That actually makes sense. But, like, the thing with Jungle Book is it's, like, easier. Although they looked cartoony in the original Jungle Book, like, they didn't look like actual animals, like, some of them, because they had kind of, like, that Disney feel to them. Like, the Winnie the Pooh. Yeah. Animals.
Like, the bear had a shirt. Eeyore had a pin on the tail.
They don't look like actual animals. It'd be really like
they were stuffed animals.
They were stuffed animals.
It'd be it might be like a Ted kind of thing, maybe. Where they're not in the way of Ted, but the way it looked. So they're like talking stuffed animals, kind of. I can see that.
Speaking of Ted, that second movie was embarrassing. But the I think the Ted idea mixed with the whole like Jurassic Park, Jungle Book kind of thing might work.
Jurassic Park? Where'd that come from?
No, I'm just saying like the CG. So to speak.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I mean, all you really need is like a beautiful Fantastic Forest, which you can CG in your sleep now. Then you have to have these stuffed animals that are alive. So if they actually, that would work fairly well. They wouldn't even have to look like actual bears or rabbits and whatnot. You'd have them as living stuffed animals.
Yeah. Or they could go the route of Space Jams and just completely like cartoon them into like the movie.
Dog, have you gone back and tried watching Space Jam again? I missed Space Jam when it came out, so I didn't get that awesome hype train. I tried to watch Space Jam like 2-3 days ago. Dude, that movie is terrible.
Yes, it is.
Holy crap.
I don't think they were going for like
good.
good. They just like
Michael Jordan.
They just throw all these characters that seem relevant to children these days, and they'll love it.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Basketball players, not good actors. Not good actors.
Definitely not.
What about Shaq in those commercials now? Shaq does commercials. Yeah,
Shaq is a completely different entity altogether, though.
Shaq Soda?
Or what are we, are,
if you want to see a great Shaq movie, go and watch Kazam. That shit is the bomb.
I've never even heard of that.
Okay.
Yeah, you need to watch that movie. I'm telling you, your life will be changed.
We'll add it to our backlog of shame.
Yes.
Or Steel. Steel is so good. Oh, so good.
Okay. Man. All right. So all that news out of the way, let's go ahead and move on to our main topic, and it is going to be our top Nintendo titles, games that we've played either for a nostalgic factor or have revisited, and just anything that we think is just good. And that's a very broad list.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, let's go ahead and start with just top titles. Think of their top three. I'm going to go first. Like my top, actually, that's kind of hard.
Wait, can we just put out there that Pokemon is like excluded? Can we exclude Pokemon? Can we
get like top five? Does it have to be top three?
If you say Pokemon, just say the series if it's in your top. Don't be like Pokemon Diamonds, like my number one, Pokemon X and Y is my number two. If you're going to say Pokemon, just keep it to one of your things, I'd say.
Yeah, if you go fanboy, I will verbally slap you.
Well, no, that's why I wanted to, like, just say, like, hey, can we, like, exclude
I guess we could
Pokemon, because Pokemon's a good game, and can we all agree that, like, it's one of our favorites?
Dude, it's a Nintendo title. If you're going to give, you're going to open the floor to Nintendo, you got to let the nerds speak.
Okay.
Three of us.
Okay, we won't exclude anything then.
I'm going to go, okay, now the first thing I'm going to say is if Nintendo wanted to end the world, like, literally, then all they have to do is release a trailer all they had to do was release a trailer for Super Mario Sunshine 2 to come out on the Switch, and I will be the bringer of death on the world.
Ender of worlds.
That's pretty good.
You going all Oppenheimer.
Yeah. that's all I had to do. If they did that when they released the Switch, like that event that they did, I would have had like six of them pre-ordered.
For me, if they remade Metroid Fusion.
Or like the Metroid Prime series?
No, Metroid Fusion.
What's Fusion? Is it like a Metroidvania style? It's not first person? Like Fusion?
Yeah, it's not first person.
Prime was brilliant. I think they should do both the what they call the Metroidvania thing. I think they should do that and the first person. I think the first person games were really, really good. I think they added a whole new layer of gameplay.
I get it now.
Yeah, you never understood why they called it Metroidvania?
It's like a 2D side-scroller, right?
Yeah, whole genre itself. I mean, they designed a
Metroid
genre
around that. Metroid came up with the genre. Metroid didn't come up with the genre, but Metroid perfected the genre. And then Castlevania copied it, and Castlevania drew more attention because there's how many fucking Metroid games compared to Castlevania? Yeah, exactly. And so it became Metroidvania.
Huh, wait, which one came first, Metroid or Castlevania? I'm almost sure it was Castlevania first.
No, Metroid came first. Metroid was one of the
Google.
Yeah, Metroid. Yeah, Metroid definitely came first. Metroid was one of the it was like the second or third. I think it might have been the third. I don't remember what the term for it is, but the third set of releases. It was an earlier release game.
For what?
For Nintendo. They used to have the box art would have a picture on the box art, and it'd be slightly crooked, and then it would have like a frame of animation from the game. And the original Metroid box art was a slightly tilted picture, and you had Samus blowing up one of the it might have been a Metroid.
Can I interject for a second? Castlevania came out a month after Metroid.
There it is. The fact checker
didn't pick up the open world thing until 2, and even then it wasn't anywhere like Metroid. Castlevania didn't become like Metroid that deeply until Symphony of the Night. Symphony of the Night really blew the doors off on how a Castlevania game was made, because before it was linear and it was done in stages, except for Castlevania 2. But Castlevania 2 was more spread out horizontally, with some up and down whereas Metroid was a large area in all directions. And Symphony of the Night really kind of did that. But if you were looking for the first Metroid-like game that Castlevania had done, it would be Castlevania 2.
I remember what you're talking about, though. I remember seeing it was either... I think it was NES. They had like that little box art.
Yes, that was Metroid Fusion. That was Metroid Fusion.
Yeah, so it had to be.
That game is... I don't think it was meant to be a horror game, but it completely scared the crap out of me as a child. Because when you
were... The advanced game?
No, not the, what? Not the...
No, Metroid Fusion.
Are you sure it was Fusion not just was called Metroid? Game. I think Metroid Fusion was a remake, and that was on the Game Boy Advance. Metroid Fusion was on the Advance.
It wasn't a remake. No, Fusion was what happened after the Prime games, because your suit was fucked up after the last game. Right. And it was infected with that life form virus thing.
Life form X actually had or something like that?
Her, she had to fight her suit and get a new suit, which was... techno-organic weird. It's been a while since I played it.
That new suit,
decent game, but it's way too easy.
Because the life form took over the other suit, and it was a completely other suit that had all of her powers. Her
body on the inside, like originally it was hollow, but it built
a
clone of her from its material inside. So then there was a duplicate of her, but it was X instead of her.
Yeah, that
I believe it was a hive life form. I don't think it was one thought. I think all the cells were. It was kind of like the whole
it was a hive
Parasite Eve thing. Yeah,
but so that even though
the
suit
looked like it, and the body inside looked like it. Well, the concept is fairly terrifying.
It is.
The game itself is a pretty good game. It's just too easy for Metroid.
What I had the
you were a child.
I had the hardest.
A couple hours.
No, even as an adult, like I get the game on the emulator and I still cannot I cannot get past that part. It's where you first encounter yourself and the other suit. And what's difficult about it is that the other suit, your copy, has all your abilities before you do. You lose all your abilities at the beginning of the game. And I know it's like a game device and like to like help, like
so MacGuffin, it's a staple. We always do that.
Yeah, but I know it's like part of the game, but that terrified me. I'm like, okay, this other me is like trying to catch me and kill me. And at one point, like you have to like run away from it. And this thing has like your speed up ability and it can like walk through wall. It can break down the walls and you're like trying to maneuver through this obstacle course. And it is that part took me forever as a child to get through. And it terrified me. The first time I went through it, I remember the feeling because I can't compare it to anything else. Like when that part showed up and I'm, oh my God, like my heart sank and I about right had
like Fusion just blew your fear cherry right through the roof. Jesus.
For all you it listeners, did. I have a grown ass man sitting next to me tearing up and he's crying. I know there's no video, he's crying.
I'm getting emotional about it because I remember it clearly.
I'm spiritually right now. I'm hugging you, brother, and maybe a little reach around. I'm hugging you.
Thank you. Ooh. Thank you. But I just remember it so clearly because it was like it was like a first for me, just that feeling. And will forever be like my favorite Nintendo game of old.
Powerful, man. Because Nintendo did a first for everybody. I think they're pioneers that way.
I guess we'll just stick.
Everything we have now from there.
I think we'll just stick to favorite game then instead of top three since you're so passionate. That means I have to think. Sean, you got
that was my favorite.
What do you got?
I didn't do a single favorite, man.
It's the main topic.
If I had to pick one single favorite, if I wasn't allowed to talk about any of the other beloved titles and I had a shitload, it would probably be, it'd have to be at least a tie.
Okay. Well, we can deal with that. What are the two games? What would be the tie?
Castlevania and Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy was Nintendo?
It's not a Nintendo game, Sean. Square Enix.
Yes, it was.
Final Fantasy.
You mean made by Nintendo?
Yeah, made by Nintendo. Games.
Castlevania wasn't made by Nintendo. If you're just talking about Nintendo party games,
no, I'm talking about games.
Wait, did I get it wrong then? Is Metroid made by Nintendo?
Originating. No, yeah, Metroid's a Nintendo title.
Okay.
Are you talking about games that were actually created by Nintendo or games that originated on the NES or a Nintendo system?
Both?
Because if you're talking about that, then I can't say Castlevania because that's Konami. I mean, granted, it was licensed to Nintendo for a good amount of time, but I couldn't mention Castlevania then. So if I have to use a Nintendo title.
Just Nintendo. We can say that okay. For like another.
All right. I can play that. All right. Okay. Damn, that's still hard, dude, because I'm torn between Mario, like straight up Mario, because I'll tell you, dude, I actually played Mario in the arcades because my family, I've grown up from like dirt poor beginnings, and I couldn't get a Nintendo until it was the last few years of the NES's life cycle. And I played that into the first few years of the Super Nintendo's life cycle, saving up pennies so I could get the Super Nintendo so I could play, you know, Super Mario World with the giant bullet bills and shit. And Mario was a fascination for me. I'd go and spend money on arcade machines to play Super Mario Brothers. And these arcade machines were ripoffs because they were, I don't remember what they were called. It was like Play Choice or some shit like that. But essentially they would run for 3 minutes. You would put in a quarter, it was before the 50 cent thing started, and then they would give you a list of say 30 Nintendo games, and then you could select the game, start the game just as if it was in a Nintendo, but what would happen is after 3 minutes the game would just turn off, and then you'd have to put a quarter in if you wanted to continue, or else it would just shut off. And I would feed money into this fucking game to play a pack-in title. Like, dead serious, just to fucking play a pack-in title. Everybody used to think I was batshit insane because they would go with me to the arcades and they'd be playing Golden Axe or something else. And I liked those games too, but my ass would make sure I spent at least a half an hour at fucking Super Mario Brothers because I loved that game. Like, my world was consumed with, like, needing a Nintendo and playing games, and that's where I got good at games when they were legit difficult. And so, like, and they were fucking hard, a lot of them. But so it would definitely have to be Mario is up there, probably tied with Zelda.
Which one?
Huh? The series or either Mario series or Zelda series.
No.
But I mean, there's other.
Which Zelda specifically?
Give me a Zelda. Since we're doing like since we're doing like straight up Nintendo titles, that did make the list of stuff we could pick a lot shorter. Because I took a lot out. So give us a Zelda that you find is your favorite.
For me, it's either Link to the Past or Twilight Princess.
Well, if I'm sticking with an old system, if I stick with the NES, I'd probably go with the original Zelda.
It could be Mario any. 3. You don't have to stick to it.
If I'm sticking with Super Nintendo, it would be Super Mario World or A Link to the Past.
Yeah.
A Link to the Past is what really opened up the Zelda franchise because they added so much more depth and they built off of that. And you wouldn't have Ocarina, you wouldn't have Wind Waker, you wouldn't have any of that if they hadn't really boosted from the simplicity of the first game and opened up the world and fleshed it out and started introducing other characters and villages and all kinds of other shit. So, you know, I think that I'd probably go to A Link to the Past. And if you're talking about the next gen systems like the Wii U and the Wii and so on, I'm kind of torn between. I'll honestly say, as much as I loved Twilight Princess and it had more drama, it absolutely had more drama because that whole love triangle between Link and Midna and Zelda.
That's canon?
Yeah, dude. This is canon. No, well, the canon is it Link. Link, well, you never fucking know how Link feels about anything except for little hints that the writers put in here and there because he's fucking shit for expressive. But at the end of Twilight Princess, Midna has to force herself to go to where she belongs because she's attached to Link. She's in love with him. And Zelda, and I don't fucking have any idea how Zelda's in love with him, but Midna realizes that Zelda wants to be with Link and that this whole time Link's been fulfilling his role as the destined blah, 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 blah. And so she actually steps out of the way so that Link can be with Zelda. Because in some of the Zelda canon, they're just friends, and some of them he's simply, I mean, she appreciates him, but they don't have a personal relationship. He's more like, this is his duty and this is her duty. And in other ones, she's more like a sister or a friend or whatever. There's only a handful of titles where there's romantic implications, like the first game. After he rescues her, they have a relationship. See, I don't even think they said she was a princess, like, officially in that game. She was called Princess Zelda, but you never really get a grasp for the world in the first game, in the 8-bit game.
All right, slight tirade. Since we've been talking about this.
Well, anyway.
No. Favorite Zelda female?
What?
Favorite Zelda female. Like, any, I don't care if it's canon or not canon, but your, like, favorite, well, obviously it's canon, but, like, your favorite female character from any Zelda game. It could be if you pick one from Hyrule Warriors. Well, that doesn't make any sense because that comes from all these Zeldas.
Hyrule technically is canon.
Yeah, no, I know. I understand that. I'm saying, like, think back to all the Zelda characters.
Minda.
It's Midna. Not Minda.
Sorry.
It's Midna.
Midna.
Favorite character.
Yeah.
Midna was the most complex for sure. She got the most depth out of any female in a Zelda game, not counting Zelda herself, who wasn't always the deepest character in all of them.
No, not.
That's my favorite.
Your favorite's Midna?
Yeah, it is.
What about you, Sean? Who's your favorite? Now, like, it could be in any way, either character development, or if you two are in a room, some things would happen. Or, well, that's weird.
Well, see, now I've put you for fictitious characters, but
now I've put weird thoughts in my head because you just said Midna.
Don't think of Midna as like from Twilight Princess. Just look at Midna. Just telling me about,
like, the children, and now you got kids going, I like playing Zelda. What?
Oh, God. Just look it up on Reddit.
Look what Midna. Up on Reddit.
Think Midna. Of the children, people.
Oh, we already got Sean dropping N-bombs, so we've lost that. We're explicit at this point.
No, who remembers Eris Morn?
Eris Morn? Oh, no.
Remember? Sean, God. I think Sean remembers.
No. I hate you so much for that, Anthony. Every
I just
day,
got over I that. I was able to sleep normally again. I don't know. Back.
Now look up Midna, or do you want me to send you guys something?
No, we're good.
No, I know where you live.
We're gonna stay away from the Midna Rule 34 for today.
No, it's Midna and Link is what you gotta look up.
It's the dog. I know what it is. I know it without even seeing it. I know what it is, and I don't want this discussion to continue.
Dude,
I'm taking a stand.
Real shit though. Link would split Midna in half. That's
all I'm gonna say. Well, you see, this is not how it happened in the fan art. The fan art was not like this.
Okay, no, we're gonna
Midna was like a full person. Okay,
okay.
So think about it like that.
People, there's so much wrong with you.
All right. Now that we'll move away from that. Okay. My favorite character.
Anyway, my favorite one was Fee.
Fee? You mean the tutorial machine?
No, here's why. Because by the end of the game, Fee had developed emotions. You saw her over the course of the game. They gave you little hints, and they didn't, again, they never play anything strong. They never play anything obvious. It's this whole fucking Japanese mentality. You only put in slight hints. But by the end of the game, Fee made a sacrifice that was even greater than the one Midna had to make in Twilight Princess, because Fee put her ass to permanent sleep and said goodbye to the only person that she had ever had a chance to bond with. And by the end of the game, she had shown that she cared a great deal about Link. And she's following her prime directive and puts her ass into the sword. So every person that carries that very same master sword through the rest of time is carrying the comatose soul of Fee. And that just blows my fucking mind. So if I have to pick a favorite character right now, and my opinion will change in 15 minutes, but right now I pick Fee. I'm going with Fee because she took one for the team. Because if she didn't put herself back on the sword would have never had the power to kill Ganon.
She took one for the team, eh?
for fucking all time. Yeah, because in every game, the Master Sword is the same blade.
Okay. Like how Minna took one on Reddit.
I fucking hate you so much right now.
All
right. I'm God.
I think we can all say that Anthony is no longer allowed to join.
Yeah. This will be the debut and last episode of Anthony being a co-host on the podcast.
He can join. You just got to duct tape his ass and keep him away from the internet.
Well, my internet is pretty slow, so there's not much I can do.
Yeah, he get.
Well, apparently you can find pictures because it's still etched into my fucking brain.
It's like one picture per FAP session.
Yeah.
Save that in the photo locker.
The photo locker. Okay.
Right, Kyle, your don't favorite mind, female. Don't
need my mom seeing that shit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what are we, in high school again?
Fucking photo bucket's been shut down like 32 times.
Oh, my God. Okay, my favorite female character, I want to say, just to be relevant, and I haven't played a lot of the Zeldas either, I want to say the Breath of the Wild Zelda. And
oh, you just like her because of her booty.
Now, she have a fantastic booty, but besides the fantastic booty, I feel like amongst all the other Zeldas,
yeah,
well,
from
the ones I've played, I think that like her character is the most interesting, and the fact that how they play it out, like you don't know what's happening to her. It's been, well, spoilers if you haven't played the game yet. It's been like, so everyone, mute your device for the next 30 seconds. Oh.
Okay, I'll just come back in 30 seconds.
Okay. Straight up put his mic down. Okay. Well, Link's been injured, and he's been asleep for 100 years, and Zelda is basically fighting off Ganon in the castle, and she's been fending him off for the last 100 years. So you don't know a lot about her, and you learn more about her through these memories that you have that you share with her 100 years ago. And just, like, seeing her as a
kid. Wait a minute.
I'm just letting you know.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I thought Link was a different person in each of the iterations.
The Legend of Zelda. Oh, Jesus. Smack the table. The Legend of Zelda. Yeah, we're done with the spoiler. Okay. The Legend of Zelda refers to, like, Link as a whole. Link, it does change. He's not always the same person. That is true. But in Breath of the Wild, Link is the same Link from... What Link is he connected to? Because there's the Temple of Time is there. The Lost Woods are there. They have all these places that have existed in previous games. You're still in Hyrule. So I'm assuming he's connected to like maybe the...
Or maybe you're the same Link.
I'm heading towards
that. There's only two games where you're not Hyrule.
Wait, what was that?
There's only two games where you're not in Hyrule.
Okay, whatever. Well, he's in Hyrule and he's Link. And... Ganon's back again, as always, and you have to find him. But I like how they show how you learn the way you learn more about the Zelda in Breath of the Wild through the memories and all that other stuff you participate in. I feel like her character is more interesting. She shows regret for bringing you into what she had to do and how fast that she had to kind of train you up to be her knight, kind of practically.
She's always shown regret. She's never been particularly
again,
pleased.
This is based on the Zeldas I've played, and that's Majora's Mask, Breath of the Wild.
Ocarina of Time.
I did not actually play Ocarina of Time.
No?
I didn't beat it.
Oh.
I played a little bit of it on the 64.
Technically, I understand why everybody loves Majora's Mask. Technically, from a technical perspective, it offered you more and a deeper game than Ocarina of Time. But it still, to me, feels like the odd man out of all the games. It's just got a much darker tone. It doesn't fall in line with the other games. Now, granted, I think one of the reasons why people love it so much is because it eschews the standard formula. But yeah. It just never felt like... It always felt like a weird kind of drug-induced spinoff to me.
I don't know. I think the way they handle it as you play throughout the game, I think it's cool because it kind of seems... Well, actually... I can't really even say that. It is pretty much dark from the get-go. You're like, oh, here's the moon. It's going to crash into the earth. Everyone's going to die. Godspeed.
You're playing through Limbo. I mean, the whole neighborhood, the whole area, every person and thing you meet in that area died from shit related to Ganon. Everyone there is a soul that doesn't know they're dead. They're just waiting to move on. That's why. What is it called? Terminus or some shit like that?
Yeah.
What's the name of the town?
But this isn't that's blatant. Depressing. This isn't blatantly said in the game, though, is it? This is just like speculation.
The creators. If you have Hyrule Historia, which I do, because I'm a diehard Zelda fan. If you read Hyrule Historia, and also for anyone out there who actually is a fan of the Hyrule Historia, they will continue to release new versions of the book, which makes the old versions of the book a collector's item, but the new ones will incorporate the new games and shit. But according to Hyrule Historia, the Link, because you know how every game splits off the timeline, there's multiple timelines, blah, blah, blah. The Link that is in Hyrule Historia is one that was killed by Ganon. It's one of the Links that failed, I believe, or else it's the Link. No, I remember.
Well, yeah, he beat Zelda timeline.
Ganon. Yeah, he beat Ganon as a child, but he was mortally wounded. And so he didn't have a chance to do something, because that's the same spirit that you see in Twilight Princess. The wolf is the Link from Ocarina of Time, is the Link that Ganon mortally wounded in, I'm sorry, you know, is the Link from Majora's Mask, which is the Link that Ganon mortally wounded or some shit like that.
Whoa, whoa,
but they finally came out and said, what? Hold on. I'm trying to answer your fucking question.
Looking at Anthony while you were talking, and you straight up like blew his mind. Like,
you did. That's I just wanted to Anthony. Let you know that you're like blowing my mind now. Please continue.
Okay. All right. Essentially speaking, everything starts with Skyward Sword. And then the events of Skyward Sword, after Skyward Sword, there's another game. I don't remember which one came after that. And then the timeline fractures, and the game Link wins or loses. Right. And so then you have two results, and that creates parallel worlds. And each one of those results is a separate Zelda game. And in those Zelda games, Link wins or loses, and then the timeline splits again. Right. So you have now, I believe there's three independent timelines that the games are going through. I don't know which one the current Zelda game is a part of yet. They haven't revealed that, because it could be any one of them, because all of them had a Temple of Time. All of them have had Links, Zeldas, Impas, and all of these Impas and Links and Zeldas and Ganondorfs, of the one thing that is in common, they all share, they're all reincarnations, but at the same time, they have their own independent spirit. So if one Link dies, his spirit continues, but that Link's soul is still tied to the next Link that's born. So they're all like multiple personalities that continue to be born to this soul. And that's why he's always the hero of time. He always has the same outfit. It's always the same sword. Each of these timelines has the same people in it in a sense, but they're still different people. And in Majora's Mask, Link is dead. He's riding the horse, away from the battle, and he falls off the horse, right? In the very beginning. You remember that?
Oh, I remember hearing about Skull, this, actually. Yeah,
and then a Skull Kid comes along and takes it. Now, some smart guys were playing the game, these diehards, and they played it, and they noticed all the subtle imagery, all the subtle statements, and they put it together that Link died. And he died before anyone found out that he was the hero of time, before anyone knew what had happened. He was just able to stop Ganon or some shit like that. I know I'm getting some of this wrong. But in the end, what happened is his spirit goes to Limbo. It goes it's debated. They haven't confirmed whether everyone there is a lost soul like Link was, or if it's just all something that's flashing through his mind. But in this land of the dead, he goes through this process to try and save all these people. And in the meanwhile, he also comes to terms with his own death, which is why at the end of the game, like in the very beginning, the mask guy is doing a little dance and he says something to you, and I don't remember what it is, but he basically tells you, you're fucking dead. And nobody got that from what he was saying, because the mask guy is fucking insane. So they thought he was talking about something entirely, but the speech that he gives in the beginning, he's telling you, you're dead and this is your thing. And then you go and do the thing. And at the very end, Link accepts that he's dead and he moves on. So I don't know if those other spirits legit were spirits, or if they were just manufactured by Link's mind and this was him having to be the hero or something like that. There's a lot of details I'm fuzzy on because I haven't picked the book up in like 3 years. But yeah, he's dead in that game, which was a bummer for me because all the time Link was like, yay, fantasy and adventure. And then there's this one game out of all of them where it's like, hey, dead. And it just did not work for me. So that, and like, I hated the whole rewinding, fast forwarding time bit. That was such an annoying chore for me. But the, otherwise, I, and the, you know, the two people out there that are listening want to light me on fire, I still love the game. It just, it feels out of place for me. And I'm someone who's very addicted to canon, and it doesn't feel like part of the canon, but it legitimate is. Like, Japan has said, Nintendo has said, yes, you're right. This is correct. This is actually what's happening. This is what happened. He was dead.
Well,
there's a ton of YouTube videos about it. Dude, you can watch them, and they explain it much better than I am.
So Majora's Mask is just an outcome of Link dying.
Everything is... Well, yeah.
Okay.
Majora's Mask, yeah. The one of the outcomes, because Ocarina of Time actually had three timelines split off of it. As a matter of fact, that may be the one that fractured the timelines, now that I think of it. Because in one of them, adult Link wins. That's the outcome you get when you play the game. In another outcome, Ganon kills Link before he travels through time. And that creates another timeline because Ganon has won. And then in another outcome, Link goes through time and still fails, and that creates the third timeline. So yeah, it was Ocarina of Time that fractured the timelines. And one of those timelines has Majora's Mask, which is then followed in that timeline by Twilight Princess, because that is the same Link that from Majora's Mask that is there, and he gives Link that speech like, hey, I regret something, and that's why I'm back here to teach you these skills, because I never had anyone to pass them on to, because I died young and never got to teach anybody this shit, so I'm going to tell you because you're fucking retarded and have no skills right now. And Ganondorf's a nasty motherfucker. And the thing that really gets my fucking ass is Ganon is the only one that remembers anything. Like, he gets little flashes of memories from his past lives and his past selves, because a lot of times it's the same Ganon who's just been locked away for a long fucking time. I wonder sometimes if he shares the memories of his parallel selves as well, because Ganon just always knows too much.
Some deep stuff.
This is why this is called anyway. Thought Patrol.
Thought Patrol, yeah, pretty much. So have we all said our favorite titles?
I believe so.
I have not. Well, Sean has. And you said Metroid. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to be super simple and about this one. And, well, you know, it's hard. Like, I know you guys have said the same exact thing, but it's hard about it, because you think back to your childhood. And there's a lot of games to narrow down to one in particular.
Which one has impacted you the most? What has given you, like... Your first, like,
well, I can't. The problem I have with Zelda is I didn't get into it until much later into the series, so I never really had a connection to them early on. So I've played them later as I got older and having more knowledge about them. I enjoy them, but I'm gonna say impacted me the most would probably be Super Mario Sunshine. Like, that game, when I was a kid, that
good game.
It is, and I don't know. It's made, they've made, I'm sure it was popular. It might have not been, I don't know how it was in Japan, but I'm sure it was popular.
It was popular, dude, but it wasn't anywhere near like the earth shaking popularity. There's a whole conversation that goes along with that I'm not going to do to you right now, but it was popular, but it didn't break any sales records. It was profitable.
Yeah. Okay. I want a second one of those. It broke
the formula enough to alienate people. You know what I'm saying? But I think the reason that it's good is because the same thing you do. It keeps enough of the traditional Mario to still be a badass Mario game, but it incorporates new mechanics to keep things fresh. And it's an explorer Mario. It's not a linear Mario, which is pretty fucking awesome, too, because there's tons of secrets and shit to find.
Yeah. Like, all they need to do, because, like, the Switch right now, if you go on its digital store, they have, like, 30-something titles, and, like, 90% of them are indie. All they need to do is open up their virtual console store and put – I'm sure they're working on it, because they know damn well they're going to make a shitload of money by throwing some of their older titles onto the Switch. Because a lot of those older games, like, they're easy to kind of – well, it depends on the game, obviously, but they're easy to pick up and play. So
all the Marios are.
Yeah, I can't imagine them not doing that, and I'm sure they're working diligently on trying to get that. But if they give me even just like a remastered version or a virtual console version of, I know they've talked about this, and Nintendo has said that they're moving GameCube titles over to the virtual console store. It's just, I don't know if they're coming over to Switch or not. And I'd be super, I'd definitely like day one be picking up Mario Sunshine on the Switch. And I've played through it like 6 or 7 times now, because I did it a couple on the original GameCube. I re-bought a GameCube and bought the game and controllers to play that game, just for that game again. And like
some of those levels were infuriating too, like the Boo House, the first time you get in there before you get those jumps down, that house is just fucking mind numbing because of the multiple levels and getting knocked off.
Or those secret levels, that like the one where you're playing like Plinko practically and you have to collect the 8 red coins.
Yeah.
Oh Jesus. Oh
my God.
Throwing the goddamn controller. Yeah.
The most.
That was also that man, and that's also the most confusing game, because that's when they abandoned the Koopa Kids and brought in Koopa Jr. Like, what the fuck happened to everybody else? They never said anything. You know,
I was listening.
They had another Koopa too. Koopa had a Jr. a long time ago. In one of the other games, he shows up, and then they just forget him. And I think it was in one of the Mario parties, and the dude just got fucking lost. And it's not the same Koopa Jr. They called him something else. I think it was Kid Koopa.
Yeah, I was listening to these gentlemen streaming Mario Kart 8, and they were talking about like where they were like trying to figure out where the baby characters come from,
right?
And like they've openly, well, they in the like the RPG kind of spinoffs, like the Superstar Saga of Mario and Luigi, they explain that they're, and also they do it in Yoshi's Island with Mario, they explain that they're like being brought to their parents, but they're dropped off by storks, and that's kind of where they came from. I haven't researched this. It just popped up in my mind. But what do you guys think? Do you think Baby Mario is Mario as a baby, or this?
I wouldn't say, to be honest. I don't even know if any of the games are linked.
I don't think so. I don't think it's Mario's son. I think it's probably Mario as a baby.
Actually, oh God! Did you know that Mario and Princess die?
In what?
Do you know that? If you watch Mario Galaxy, right? If you put the storybook together in Mario Galaxy, you get all the pages or whatever, you find out that what's her face? The one that Guy hated, the tall chick?
Rosalina.
Oh my right?
God, Rosalina.
Rosalina talks about how she used to go out with her parents at night and she would look at the stars, right?
Yeah, wasn't Princess Peach also like something? Wasn't she also like, it wasn't Mario, but it was Luigi?
Silhouettes.
Yeah, it's not Mario. That's just Luigi.
You see the silhouettes of it's clearly Mario and Princess Peach, but they never come out and say it's them. And she talks about how something bad happened and her parents died. And then the stars came and rescued her and took her away into the sky because those were the last things that she loved. So there's this deep, like, heart, you know, knife twisty in the heart part of Mario Galaxy. For anybody who's paying attention, Rosalina is Mario's daughter. Princess Peach is her mother. At some sort of alternate timeline, they had, or past timeline, somehow her parents died, which was Mario and Peach, and because she had made friends with these little Starbit people at some point in time when she was a kid, they came and adopted her and took her into space. And then Mario travels into space and meets her. So he's meeting his daughter. So there's some sort of time thing going on there.
Yeah, I remember that, definitely. Because I know that they actually talked about in the game. Yeah, well, as you're saying with the storybook element, I do remember that. I just thought, you know what it probably was?
I think Mario game that gave me the feels.
I probably watched one of those stupid MatPat videos, I think.
Those are not stupid. Do not take the name of MatPat in vain.
He's like, he does like the video game series. That dude does
his fucking research. He's smart. Game theorist and film theorist. That guy is on fire, dude. He's good.
Is the one that you're about to say Mario isn't?
No. He says that it's Luigi in that picture, not Mario. That's where I got that from. Mario.
No, but that's what I was getting at. Luigi is the father and not Mario.
Yeah,
Luigi is with Daisy. He's not with Peach.
Who? When was the last time you saw them together? Playing with what?
Mario Kart?
Playing to catch a cheater. What? Mario Kart, bro. No, yeah, and so is Bowser, their mortal enemy. Please.
They have a statue of them together.
And?
Dude, Luigi and Daisy. And Luigi goes home to Daisy at the end of fucking the haunted house game thing where he rescues Mario.
Well, what?
I don't remember that. Actually, well, I can't. I've never actually beaten Luigi's Mansion. I've only seen the ending.
I don't think anybody's beaten that game, dude. They play halfway through it and get bored.
It's such a long-ass game, too. Like, there's so much you have to do to get Mario. Like, collecting all those boos, and there's a lot of backtracking. I've never actually beaten it. I just watched the ending on YouTube. Thank God we live in the era we do today. That's all I have to say.
There's a lot of secrets to Mario games. I don't know, man. I think
YouTube's kind of ruined a lot of stuff, though. I mostly appreciate it.
Next Mario game should be Waluigi's apartment.
Wait, what do you guys think will be in that apartment?
It's black and white and comes in cardboard.
Wow. Into the room and there's just trap buttons everywhere. And every time you step it, there's a speaker that plays that noise.
Wow.
Yeah, you do notice that Waluigi is like the one character that almost never comes back except for Wario Kart, right? Like, Wario gets a little game here and there. Every now and then they'll bring the whole Mario family back for a game. But that Waluigi motherfucker, he's stuck in the corner because nobody likes his skanky ass.
He's like the weird
creepy
uncle
that no one likes. Yeah,
pretty much.
Crack addicted, creepy fucking uncle that nobody likes, driving a white pedo van.
Yeah.
That's the next secret. It's going to be at the end of the next Super Mario Galaxy. It's going to be Waluigi in a pedo van wearing a trench coat.
No, he's driving home, pulls into a driveway, walks up the stairs to his apartment complex, puts the key into the lock and twists it, turns back, looks over his shoulder, boom, credits.
I love how on Discord it just shows Jonathan unmuting himself, saying something, and then immediately after the mute button comes, like the little symbol pops up.
He's like, I've accomplished my mission.
When you pick the sound snippet to start this off with before the actual thing kicks into place, that is the quote followed by laughter, and then the shit starts. Jonathan should be the one to kick that shit off. He's got that.
That works for me. I'll go back and I'll look at it. Hey, it's at the end too. I don't have to do any work. So problem solved.
True.
Yeah. See, the best thing is even if we cut out for you guys, I still record it, so I'm perfect over here. All right, so
eat a dick.
So
we're gonna call that.
We're gonna end it there.
Great episode.
We haven't even talked about like what Nintendo has done. I guess we gotta save that for next time.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about what they did for us.
We talked about it a bit.
Well, yeah. I was talking about for gaming in general. Nintendo has made the huge strides. Nothing would be like it is today if it wasn't for Nintendo. If you were missing Sega or Sony or Xbox or any of that, all of that shit would have evolved eventually. They pioneered very little. But yeah, when it comes to Nintendo, everything we have comes from there.
Mobile gaming, console gaming, I think everything.
Well, maybe next time, Sean, if you're actually
virtual reality interfaces, all of it. I wrote a paper on this shit. I know.
Maybe next time, Sean, if you're like actually here at the right time.
Oh, my God.
So we can start the podcast on time. We might actually have the time to do that instead of me having to stop it prematurely to go to work.
I've got to work again next Saturday, but I should be ready a little bit earlier, even if I have to fucking use my phone again.
All right. That's good. OK, so we're going to call that an end. Thank you everyone for listening, for all you who did. Again, if you enjoy the content, go ahead and leave a subscribe, a like, whatever you want, even a comment telling us how much a bunch of super manly heterosexual men that we are. I'll take the heterosexual. Again, words are hard.
I think that's a thing.
Yeah, so
leave that for you.
Yo, dude, you like to fuck trains?
I love to fuck trains.
That's the snippet.
What about fucking trannies?
All right.
I would never cheat on you, Jonathan. You know I love you, baby.
All right. We have a Discord channel. If you want to come talk to us, chill out with us, submit any. If you have questions for us as a whole that we could answer on the podcast, we'll give you a shout out. And, or you could also follow us on Twitter. We'll be working on getting notifications if we ever end up doing any type of community event to hang out with you guys. Follow the Twitter. And then also Discord would probably be that the easiest way. So you all have a beautiful week, and we'll see you next time.